But we thank God for your presence. Let's give God praise for the Reverend Al Sharpton, who will bring the word of God to us.
Give an honor to God, to our pastor, Bishop T. Garrett Benjamin, and to our newly installed senior pastor, Reverend David Hampton, to all of the ministers of the gospel and you that come for this occasion. First, we thank God for another day. Amen. Too often we take days that God give us for granted. I always marvel how people get up in the morning like God owed them another day, or like they did something to earn another day. But we ought to be grateful every day that God gave us something, that he didn't owe us, and that we didn't earn, but he gave it to us anyhow. I'm honored and grateful to be here tonight for this historic occasion. What you have witnessed tonight is not only historic for this church, but it's historic for the broader Christian community and the community in which this church has served so long. Rarely do you see a man with the ability, the history, the respect, and regard that Bishop Benjamin has had decide to move on while he is yet still relevant and in his prime. What he has shown tonight and in this whole process is a real commitment and belief for what he has preached for 43 years. Most folk, we have to wait for them to fall out. And then we have to try and remind people of their greater days. Reverend Benjamin, Bishop Benjamin, is still in his great days and decided at his height to bring on one that will continue to go forward. You should not take for granted the great leadership and the great legacy that Bishop Benjamin has shown us tonight. You know, I've been blessed to have several role models and mentors in my life. One was not in the church. One was an entertainer. You knew him as the Godfather Soul, James Brown. In fact, the man that managed him, Charles Bobbitt, travels with me now, managed James Brown for 41 years. And James Brown once told me, Bishop Benjamin, he said, do the best you can, and then when your work is done, move on. He said, it's always better for people to miss you than for people to wish you would get out of the way. And when he got older, he would only come out every once in a while. He said he'd rather them say, well, Michael's good and Usher's good, but you should have seen James Brown, than for them to say, I went and saw James Brown and he couldn't even get up from a split no more. Some preachers stay too long. And some we will always wonder how they had the courage to move on. And Bishop, I really respect and admire the spirit and grace that you have shown in this process. And we certainly know that with much history for this church, for this city, for this nation, and for our race has moved forward because of the leadership and sacrifice of Bishop Benjamin and Lady Benjamin. Give them both a big hand. Give him a big hand. I've known David Hampton, as he said, for the last several years. And when he said he wanted me to come do the sermon tonight, I told him I'm honored because I know of his commitment, his sincerity, his diligence, his vision. And God has touched him and blessed him. And as you have installed him tonight, I believe that he will more than live up to carrying the mantle of T. Garrett Benjamin and this church until the next makings of what God would have it be. We're in a strange time and a different time and a new time. And God will call on those that will only hear his voice. I heard Bishop in his charge to Hampton saying that you're only serving for the audience of one. And that is going to be very, very necessary that he remember that. I preached this morning in Dallas for Freddie Haynes, and I was telling the congregation that we're in times now that it's very difficult to model and study. I'm looking in Bishop's office, all of the books he has. You could study some things, but we're in a time now that some stuff you can't study. I'm a lead a civil rights organization. In fact, David Hampton's on the national board, as is Jeff Johnson. No civil rights leader, Bishop, faced what we face today. No book I could read could tell me how you hold a black president accountable without undermining him at the same time. I mean, we've never been here before. I can read all I want about Dr. King, Frederick Douglass, to Dr. King, to Jesse, but none of them had the function at that. Because no matter who they dealt with, it was not a black head of state. So this is a different time. Hampton will lead at a different time. But if you submit to the God of all times, you can lead effectively because it was all laid out by him. So you can read and study all you want. Some things you're going to have to submit to divine guidance, because some things you can't imitate. Some things God will have you emulate. One of the great things I've heard was when Bishop Benjamin said tonight, don't be a copy of me. Because too many great men, some of you pastors here tonight, don't understand there's a difference between mentoring and cloning. Some folk don't want mentees, they want clones. They want folk to be a carbon copy of them. God never called nobody as an extension of another calling. God didn't call me to be an extension of your call. God called you and he called me, and God can use you and me in a way that continues a tradition, but it is not an extension of the same call. Don't put yourself in the place of God. You were an instrument of God and he got other instruments. Some of us act like we can't have church unless you on the program. Choir can't sing unless you lead the song. We've been having church thousands of years before you got here. And we're going to have it thousands of years after you gone. Don't ever think you are indispensable to God. Remember that this is about God. This is not about you. And if you seek him first, he will add unto it. But the minute your ego gets bigger than your obedience, you getting ready to fall and the whole world will watch you shatter. Want you to turn briefly tonight to the book of Joshua. First chapter. Ninth verse. Glad to see Reverend Jasper Payton, who also raised me in Bethany with Reverend William Augustus Jones. It reads, have not I commanded thee, be strong and of good courage. Be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed. For the Lord thy God, is with thee whithersoever thou goest. Then Joshua commanded the officers of the people, saying, pass through the host and command the people, saying, prepare you, for within 3 days ye shall pass over this Jordan and go in to possess the land which the Lord God giveth you to possess it. May God add a blessing to the reading of his word. I want to use for thought tonight God's promise. God's promise. It is a tradition in the civil rights movement in March of every year, we go to Selma, Alabama to reenact the Bloody Sunday march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge. And every year, John Lewis, who was beaten on that bridge, the march that led to the Voting Rights Act, leads those of us that were too young to be there, those that were old enough to be there, and those that were older than them. And we have a service at Brown Chapel and march across the bridge in commemorating what happened in 1965. In 2007, the speaker that year was a senator from Illinois named Barack Obama. And then Senator Obama talked, Reverend Hampton, about the Joshua generation. He said that the generation of Dr. King and Reverend Abernathy and Joe Lowry and Andy Young and Jesse Jackson, and those were the Moses generation. And then those of us that were a few years younger was the Joshua generation. Later that day, he and I talked, and we've continued that conversation even as he's become president. And I told him that the mistake a lot of people make, because everywhere I go, I hear this talk about the Joshua generation. If you're going to talk about the Joshua generation, you should at least understand who Joshua was. Joshua was not just younger than Moses. Joshua was a continuation of the same use God had of Moses. The problem we have is that we have younger folk who have become an abortion to God's will. So they've used a new generation age to try and abort the direction that God was bringing his people. You must remember now, the children of Israel were in bondage, served 300 years, had to make brick and build brick without straw, had to work for no wages. They prayed, they fasted, they asked God to deliver them. God heard their cry. God sent Moses as their leader and backed Moses up. One of the ways you know that God sends somebody is he backs them up. If you've been sent by God, you don't have to prove it. God will make evident that he sent you because he will back you up. He sent Moses to Pharaoh and backed Moses up with 7 plagues. I often thought about Bishop Benjamin, why didn't God just wipe Pharaoh out the first time? But the first thing God had to do was break down the doubt and fear of the Israelites. Many of them felt that Pharaoh's gods were stronger than God. So it took 6 plagues for them to realize that the God of Israel was the real God. After 6 plagues of the God of the Israelites defeating Pharaoh's false gods, God told Moses, let Pharaoh know now that I'm going to let the death angel loose. And the death angel's coming through Egypt. And I'm going to tell you now, the death angel is not going to ring nobody's bell. Not going to knock on nobody's door. She's sweeping through and she's only going to look on the doorpost. And if she sees the blood of the lamb on the doorpost, she's going to keep going. That's where Passover comes from. There were many, Bishop, that believed in the Exodus and believed in the God of Israel that lived in the houses of non-believers. And because they believed it, they snuck out and put the blood of the lamb on the doorpost. And when the death angel rode through, that household was spared. Not because everybody in the house was correct, but because somebody put the blood on the doorpost. What are you saying, Shopton? Some in this generation have been spared, have big jobs, have big titles, have achieved things that grandmama never believed was possible. Not because they believed in anything, but they've been spared because men like T. Gad Benjamin put their blood on your doorposts. And you were liberated and brought out of bondage. But the problem is, since you didn't come out the Exodus, you standing at the Jordan and don't know what to do. Because you are the beneficiaries of an Exodus you never believed in. Joshua knew what to do at the Jordan because he was a kid at the Red Sea. And if you watch what God did with Moses, then you know what God can do with you. Joshua watched what Moses did. David Hampton watched what God did. Grew up in the church. Grew up under Johnson. Watched as he worked in the community with Bishop Benjamin. So as he's installed tonight, he is not some new young creature that we dropped in Indianapolis from somewhere. He came through the ranks. He paid his dues. He learned his lesson and became full grown in what he grew up in. So now God can say to him, as I was with Benjamin, so shall I be with you. Now, let's not be deceived. He is not the only one would want to lead a historic church like this. But your ambition should not be confused with your anointing. Your degree should not be confused with your preparation. Everybody that's got a degree doesn't mean they prepared. There's a difference between knowing what to say and believing what you're saying. Many can speak pretty language. Many can titillate the ear with their oratorical skills. Many of you can confound us with your proper hermeneutics and your proper oratory and your delving into theological concepts. But it's going to take more than that to pass the folk that's been broke down in a wicked economy. It's going to take more than that to give hope to people in despair. We don't need no pretty talk. We need somebody that connects us to the God of our salvation. In fact, God is not even impressed with all of that. Moses couldn't even talk. When God challenged him through the burning bush, Moses said, "You don't need me. I stutter of tongue." God said, "Don't tell me what I need. Let Aaron talk. I knew you couldn't talk when you come up here." To think that the program of God is dependent on your eloquence is an arrogant assumption. God likes to take people that you would suspect is worthless and elevate and use them. You know, I travel a lot. And some weeks, 3 or 4 days a week, I'm on the road. I come here today from Dallas, going 6 in the morning to Washington, then on to New York. I fly, don't matter if it's cloudy, raining, cold, hot, don't matter. I have to try to get where I'm going. But Mr. Bobby, to tell you, the only time I won't fly, Sister Hampton, is if he tells me it's the pilot's first trip. They be standing there at the gate trying to argue with me. Reverend, it's all right. He been to pilot school. He been certified. He been tested. He got his license. I got all of that. But it's just something about the thought that he's never been in charge before. And we go up and hit some clouds, and he ain't never been in charge of the radar before. I don't want to be up there the first time he does that. Or we hit some turbulence and he'd never been in charge of the powers before. I don't want him trying that out on me. What I mean by that, some of y'all like friends and hangout buddies that have lived clean and pristine lives, never had a problem, never been in trouble, never been talked about, never had their integrity questioned, never had their reputation smeared. I don't like to hang out with folk like that. Because if you hang out with me, we liable to go through something. And if you ain't never been through nothing, I don't know if you can get through nothing. To hang out with folk that been knocked down, that been dragged through the mud, that's been talked about and scandalized, and folks said they wouldn't be nothing, and folks questioned every move and dirtied them up and muddied them up, and somehow God came and cleaned them off and wiped them down and stood them up. I know what they could take because they done already took some. If you ain't never been through nothing, you just guessing what God can do. But if you've been through the fire, if you've been through the flood, if you've been talked about and God brought you back, you can talk about a God, you know what he can do. Hampton, every trial was just a preparation. Ain't no champions without some training. You got to get hit in the gym so you can take the blows in the ring. Some of y'all want to wear the championship belt but don't want to ever get hit. But if you know that God can bring you through, you can tell the devil, take your best shot. He promised me that I would stumble, but I wouldn't fall. You and I must realize that God brought us, and he didn't bring us to leave us, as he was with those that brought us this far. He will be with us going forward. My message tonight to you, Reverend Hampton, and to this church is the same God that was with Moses. Be of good courage. His promise is he'll be with you. You have no excuse to worry. Look at the times that Benjamin had to lead us through. 43 years ago, we never thought we'd live in a land that would have the progress we had. But he brought us through all of that. If Benjamin can depend on God, then what excuse do we have? You know, I was in staff meeting, the National Action Network, and we were talking about holidays. We feed the hungry at Christmas and several of our chapters. And said, well, Reverend, what are you going to do New Year's Eve? And I thought about it. My mother passed this March, and I thought about how, Reverend Payton, one of the things that always bothered me is New Year's Day. My mother had this southern tradition of cooking and eating chitlins. I know y'all are all sophisticated and don't know nothing about that. But every New Year's Day, she would be up cleaning these chitlins. And the smell be all over the house. For you that don't know what chitlins are, it come from back in slavery days when we were denied eating good food. And sometime we had to eat and make it the best way we can. So even at that time, they would take the intestines of a pig and clean the excrement off and make a meal out of the intestines of a pig. And I thought about how my mother would clean these nasty smelling chitlins that slaves had to eat. But now I can go and sit down and have a meal at the White House. To go from eating, forced to eat hog guts, to where now you can sit down as a head of state, shows how far God brought us. That's why some of y'all worried about the fiscal cliff. If you think about where we come from, if you think about how far God brought us, I ain't worried about no cliff. He brought us from a mighty long way. I heard references to Sister Hampton, name being Hope, and I told Rem Hampton a long time ago, I love the meanings and the preachings and the admonitions of Hope. Lived my whole life on hope. But the older I've gotten, Bishop, the more I've learned that some things can happen in life that'll hope that dashes your hopes. There are things that can happen that your hope won't cover. There are days that'll occur that hope will run out. But I'm glad, David Hampton, my mother raised me in the church, that I got another gear in my spiritual transmission. That when hope gets jammed, I got another gear called faith. In fact, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things unseen. Faith is when the doctors give up, but you hold on for another doctor. Faith is when you got a pile of bills and no money, but you say he will provide all of my needs. Faith is when your friends walk out, when your loved ones turn their back, when your family deny you, but you say, I don't believe he brought me this far to leave me now. We come this far by faith, leaning on the Lord, trusting in his holy word. He never failed me yet. I'll tell you this, I'll let you go. You know, there's a tradition we had at Bethany that is followed by many churches. On Good Friday, every year we have the seven last words. And I grew up a boy preacher at Bishop Washington and later at Bethany. And Reverend Payton, I never told Reverend Jones, but one of them words always bothered me. You know, growing up in church, Bishop Benjamin, you're not supposed to question nothing. So I never would, but one of them words always bothered me. That's when Jesus was hanging on the cross. And he looked down at his mother, and he said, woman, behold our son. Son, behold our mother. And the Bible said his disciple took Mary, and she went on home. Now, that bothered me. And I got older and more secure and grown, and I decided not too many years ago to sit down and get this off my chest. So I sat down and wrote a cosmic email to Mary. I said, dear Mary, my name is Rev. Al, and I want to get this off my chest. All these years that I've gone to the seven last words, I can't understand how you left your son hanging on the cross. He was tried without a lawyer, convicted of no crime, made to carry his own death instrument on his back, hung between two thieves, pierced in his side. They mocked him and humiliated him with crown of thorns. He asked for water, they gave him vinegar. Why would you leave? How come you wasn't screaming? Why wasn't you hollering? Why wasn't you saying, leave my son alone? Why wasn't you protesting? How could you just leave him laying there in that condition? Signed my name, sent it on, and I felt better. But to my surprise, Bishop, about 2 weeks later, I got an email back from Mary. Mary said, dear Rev. Al, I'm glad that you shared with me your feelings. And though I don't usually get involved in these exchanges, I thought I would clarify for you and like-minded people my activities that day. It is true that I was there at Calvary that morning. And it is true that others was there. My girlfriend, Madeline, Mary Madeline, all of them were there. Some of the disciples was hiding, but they were there. The Pharisees and the non-believers were there. The non-believers was there to mock my son. The Pharisees were there to help supervise the execution. Mary Madeline and them were there hoping something would happen. The disciples was there saying, may be some last minute miracle will intercede. Everybody had a different view. But I was the only one at Calvary that 33 years before that had been in Bethlehem. You must remember that I brought him in the world. And I knew that I brought him in the world, and I never knew a man. So I wasn't guessing who he was. I knew who he was. Everybody else at Calvary was guessing who he was. But since he came from my body, touched by God himself, I knew who he was. So the reason I could leave the crucifixion is I had to go get my outfit ready for the resurrection. Everybody else at Calvary was wondering what was going to happen. Some were guessing what was going to happen. But I knew he was getting up. Because I knew who he was. David, you got to have Mary kind of faith. You got to know what you know, what you know. Ain't no guessing now. Ain't no hoping now. You got to know who he is. And when you know who he is, you don't have to worry about nothing. God will make a way for his children. Reason I can do what I do is I know him for myself. I used to go by what I heard the older preachers say. But Peyton, now I go by what I know for myself. When I was a little boy, I used to preach what Bill Jones preached. But now I can preach for myself. He's been food when I was hungry. He's been water when I was thirsty. He's my rock, my sword and shield, my wheel in the middle of the wheel. He's the lily of the valley, the bright and morning star. He woke me up this morning, started me on my way. Yes. Yes, yes, in my life, I've had to cry sometime. In my life, I've walked alone sometime. I've been lied on, cheated, talked about. I've been mistreated. I've been up, I've been down. I've been leveled to the ground. I've been stabbed, I've been prosecuted, but through it all, I've learned to trust in Jesus. I've learned to trust in God. Through it all, I've learned to depend on his word. He made a promise to you, and God keeps his promise. Don't worry about nothing, Hampton. The same God that brought us 43 years, he'll walk with you now. I know him for myself. You know, David, we've been friends. We go out and talk together. I haven't seen you in a few months now. I know sometimes you read the paper and I'm leading some fight. I'm in some controversy. And you go home and tell Hope we're worried about Sharpton. But I come to tell you tonight, don't worry about me. Though the storms keep on raging in my life, and sometimes it's hard to tell the night from the day. I keep my eyes on that place He has prepared for you and me. So even if the storms keep raging, even if the winds keep blowing in my life, don't worry about shouting. My soul is anchored in the Lord. My soul is anchored in the Lord. Yes, yes.